went back to Godhead, and he took with him his mother, who was his Shiksha Guru. Practically speaking, he wouldn't leave and go to the spiritual world without her. And the Lord, knowing this, arranged for her to go as well. So then Narada Muni recited three prayers, or rather Maitreya Muni to Vidura recited three prayers of Narada Muni, which Narada had recited in the assembly of the Prachetas. And we'll read those prayers again and then continue. So the three prayers are very simple, actually. They're prayers in the sense of glorification. So how does Narada glorify Dhruva? He says, simply by the influence of his spiritual advancement and powerful austerity. So by those two influences, Dhruva Maharaj, the son of Suniti, who was devoted to her husband, acquired an exalted position not possible to attain even for so-called Vedantists or strict followers of the Vedic principles, not to speak of ordinary human beings. Dhruva Maharaja's power was in his spiritual advancement and his ability to perform austerities or to give up things, anything that was not favorable for his advancing in Krishna consciousness. Second prayer. Just see how Dhruva Maharaja grieved at the harsh words of his stepmother, went to the forest at the age of only 5 years. And under my direction, underwent austerity. Although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is unconquerable, Dhruva Maharaj defeated him with the specific qualifications possessed by the Lord's devotees. So even though he was just such a young boy, Narada is glorifying that he gave him instructions and Dhruva followed them and became devoted, so devoted, he conquered the unconquerable Lord. Even at the age of 5 years old, due to his strictly following the instructions of Narada. And then the third one. Dhruva Maharaj attained an exalted position at the age of only 5 or 6 after undergoing austerities for 6 months. Alas, a great Kshatriya cannot achieve such a position even after undergoing austerities for many, many years. So Dhruva Maharaj attained this wonderful position in only 6 months of sadhana, of practices. So quickly. Why? Because he was so sincere. Because he was so determined. Because he was so fixed. And because he was so austere due to these other qualities. So if we have bahushaka, Dhruva Maharaj was not bahushaka. What does bahushaka mean?
Many branch.
Many branch. Bahu is many, shaka means branch. So he was vyavyasatmika buddhi. His intelligence was focused and fixed on this one point. I want to see Krishna. And that focusing was so powerful, and he was willing to pay whatever price that it took. So that focusing of his was so powerful that within only 6 months he came face to face with the Lord. Shakshad Darshan, it's called. So now Maitreya continues speaking to Vidura after saying these three verses, repeating the three verses that Narada said in glorification of Dhruva in the assembly of Prachetas. Maitreya continues, "My dear Vidura, whatever you have asked from me about the great reputation and character of Dhruva Maharaj, I've explained to you in all detail. Great saintly persons and devotees very much like to hear about Dhruva Maharaj." Here is Srila Prabhupada's purport. So we're going to continue reading a lot of the purports here. Srimad Bhagavatam means everything in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Whether we hear the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Lord, or we hear about the character, reputation, and activities of His devotees, they are all one and the same. Because, why? Because the devotees of the Lord, what? They're devotees of the Lord. So all their activities are in relationship with the Lord. So when we hear about the devotees, we necessarily will hear about the Lord as well. And because the devotee, his activities are all connected with the Lord, hearing about the devotees is no different from hearing about the Lord. So they're all one and the same. Neophyte devotees simply try to understand the pastimes of the Lord and are not very interested in hearing about the activities of His devotees. But such discrimination should not be indulged in by any real devotee. Sometimes less intelligent men try to hear about the rasa dance of Krishna and do not take care to hear about other portions of Srimad Bhagavatam, which they completely avoid. There are professional Bhagavata reciters who abruptly go to the Rasalila chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam as if other portions of Srimad Bhagavatam were useless. This kind of discrimination, an abrupt adaptation of the Rasalila pastimes of the Lord, is not very approved by the Acharyas. A sincere devotee should read every chapter and every word of Srimad Bhagavatam. For the beginning verses describe that it is the ripened fruit of all Vedic literatures. Devotees should not try to avoid even a word of Srimad Bhagavatam. The great sage Maitreya therefore affirmed herein that the Bhagavatam is sumattam, samattam satam, approved by great devotees. So Prabhupada is giving instructions here that Dhruva Maharaj, we should hear about Dhruva Maharaj as well as all the different pastimes in the Bhagavatam. Text 45. By hearing the narration of Dhruva, one can fulfill desires for wealth, reputation, and increased duration of life. So these are the things that people ordinarily will worship demigods or take up another path to achieve. But here, Maitreya Muni is saying, just by hearing about Dhruva Maharaj in devotion, all these results can be achieved. Fulfill one's desires for wealth, because after all, Dhruva Maharaj fulfilled his desire for wealth. Reputation, increased duration of life, all these things were benedicted upon Dhruva Maharaj by the Lord. It is so auspicious, hearing about Dhruva Maharaj is so auspicious, that one can even go to a heavenly planet or attain Dhruva Loka, which was achieved by Dhruva Maharaj, just by hearing about him. So all the results of karma and jnana and yoga can be achieved just by hearing about Dhruva Maharaj. The demigods also become pleased because this narration is so glorious and is so powerful that it can counteract all the results of one's sinful actions. Text 46. So this shows again the meaning of that verse. Akama savakamava moksha dhamma moksha kama daradita vena bhakti yogeni ajeta purushapara. That regardless of what one desires, one should take shelter of Krishna and he will get that desire. Anyone who hears the narration of Dhruva Maharaj and who repeatedly tries with faith and devotion to understand his pure character attains the pure devotional platform and executes pure devotional service. By such activities, one can diminish the threefold miserable conditions of material life. So everything is gained just by entering into the mentality of Dhruva Maharaj, understand his excellent character, his pure character. Because it's actually very interesting. On one level, Dhruva Maharaj was very materialistic. Why? Because what was his interest in the beginning? His interest in the beginning was to gain a great, great, great kingdom. He was so materially ambitious. But because he went to the Lord with that ambition, with such determination and fixedness, that the even though he achieved his material desires, that material desire was fully uprooted from his heart. So much so that when Kuvera at the end asked him for whatever benediction you want, and Kuvera is the treasure of the demigods, that means that he possesses uncountable wealth, and he could have given anything to Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj did not ask him for anything of the world. He asked him about the means. He asked him for the benediction of the means that would have him attain the lotus feet of Krishna. And what is that? To always be fixed in the remembrance of Krishna. Nothing he wanted of the material world. So he was so purified by his fixed devotional activities in Krishna's service. He became so purified. Anyone here's Prabhupada's purport to that. Here the word achyuta priya is very significant. Dhruva Maharaj's character and reputation are great because he is very dear to Achyuta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As the pastimes and activities of the Supreme Lord are pleasing to hear, hearing about his devotees who are very dear to the Supreme Person is also pleasing and potent. If one simply reads over and over again about Dhruva Maharaj by hearing and reading this chapter, one can attain the highest perfection of life in any way he desires. Most importantly, he gets the chance to become a great devotee. To become a great devotee means to finish all material conditions of materialistic life. Text 47. Mahatvam ischatam tirtam shrotu shila dayoguna yatra tejas tarichunam manoyatra manasvinam. Anyone who hears this narration of Dhruva Maharaj acquires exalted qualities like him. So what were Dhruva Maharaj's exalted qualities, especially his fixed determination to see Krishna? So by hearing, we get that exalted quality, and that is everyone's lack in Kali Yuga especially. Why is it our lack? Because we want Krishna, but we also want so many other things as well. We are bahushaka, many branched. Panantascha, unlimited other branches. And therefore, because our intelligence is not fixed, we don't make strong progress. So the one gift of hearing about Dhruva Maharaj, he gains the qualities of Dhruva Maharaj. For anyone who desires greatness, prowess, prowess means great power or influence. Here is the process by which to acquire them. And for thoughtful men who want adoration, here is the proper means. Purport. In the material world, everyone is after profit, respectability, and reputation. Everyone wants the supreme exalted position. And everyone wants to hear about the great qualities of exalted persons. All ambitions which are desirable for great persons can be fulfilled simply by reading and understanding the narration of Dhruva Maharaj's activities. So the glories of the pastimes of Dhruva Maharaj, the great sage Maitreya recommended. One should chant of the character and activities of Dhruva Maharaj both in the morning and the evening, with great attention and care, in a society of brahmanas or other twice-born persons. Purport. It is said that only in the association of devotees can one understand the importance of the character and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotees. In this verse, it is especially recommended that Dhruva Maharaj's character be discussed in a society of the twice-born, which refers to the qualified brahmins, kshatriyas, and vaishyas. One should especially seek the society of brahmanas who are elevated to the position of Vaishnava. Thus, discussion of Srimad Bhagavatam, which describes the character and pastimes of devotees and the Lord, is very quickly effective. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness has been organized for this purpose. In every center of the society, not only in the morning, evening, or noon, but practically 24 hours a day, there is continuous devotional service going on. Anyone who comes in contact with the society automatically becomes a devotee. We have actual experience that many karmis and others come to the society and find a very pleasing and peaceful atmosphere in the temples of ISKCON. In this verse, the words Dvijanmanam means of the twice born. Anyone can join the International Society for Krishna Consciousness and be initiated to become twice born. As recommended by Sanatana Goswami, by the process of initiation and authorized training, any man can become twice born. The first birth is made possible by the parents, and the second birth is made possible by the spiritual father and Vedic knowledge. Unless one is twice born, one cannot understand the transcendental characteristics of the Lord and his devotees. Study of the Vedas is therefore forbidden for sudras. Simply by academic qualifications, a sudra cannot understand the transcendental science. At the present moment, throughout the entire world, the educational system is geared to produce sudras. A big technologist is no more than a big sudra. Kalo sudra sambhava. In the age of Kali, everyone is a sudra. Because the whole population of the world consists only of sudras, there is a decline of spiritual knowledge and people are unhappy. The Krishna consciousness movement has been started especially to create qualified brahmanas to broadcast spiritual knowledge all over the world, for thus people may become very happy. So in this verse, in the purport, Prabhupada gives two purposes of ISKCON. And one is the prime one, or the basic one, is to give people the facility to discuss Srimad Bhagavatam mornings and evenings in the society of devotees. Because in the society of devotees, satam prasangam amavirya samvido vivanti vidkana rasayanaha katha. The Krishna Katha is very effective. And what do we mean when we say that Krishna Katha is effective in the society of devotees? It means that it will very rapidly improve everyone's devotion if the discussion takes place. And the discussion doesn't only mean hearing, it means discussing also, churning the topics of Krishna Katha. And the asking of questions and sharing realizations, how it looks from this point of view. Because everyone is an individual and everyone naturally has their individual points of view and individual realizations by Krishna's grace. So, on one point is that this is Tandira Charana Sevi Bhakti Sanivas Janame Janame Hoy E Avilas. This is one of the main purposes of the Krishna consciousness movement, is to give facility to hear Krishna Katha and to be engaged, and Prabhupada also says this, in devotional service. And in addition, to create people who can speak brahmanas, purified brahmanas, who can speak Krishna Katha,
who are learned, shamodamastapocham chantam,
Chantiyam Ajavam Evaja. People who have brahminical qualities, which comes through purification, Tado Rajas Tamo Bhava, Kama Labadeos Chaye. People who have become purified and are learned, who can speak Krishna Katha, and those people should go around the world and broadcast spiritual knowledge and give other people the opportunity to hear about Krishna. So all the organization and all the management and the fundraising, etc., they are not in and of themselves purposeful, but the purpose of them is these purposes. They're to facilitate the engagement of people in devotional service and the hearing, especially the hearing and training of people to speak Krishna Katha, the hearing of Krishna Katha and training people to speak about Krishna. According to their capacity, everyone may not have the capacity to become a big Bhagavatam orator and travel all over the world, but to know something about the philosophy of Krishna and be able to speak from one's realization in a very simple and honest way, everyone can do that. So that is that type of welfare work is a purpose of the Krishna, one of the foundational, fundamental purposes of the Krishna consciousness movement. Text 49 and 50. Persons who have, so more glorification of the Krishna Katha of Dhruva Maharaj, about Dhruva Maharaj. Because Dhruva Maharaj, as Prabhupada said earlier, is also Krishna Katha because it's glorification of the devotee of Krishna. Persons who have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord should recite this narration of Dhruva Maharaj without taking remuneration. No money. In other words, it shouldn't be done professionally. It should be done as seva, as service, not to make money. Specifically, recitation is recommended on the full moon or dark moon day, the Purnim or Amavasya, on the day after Ekadasi, which is the Dvadasi, on the appearance of the Shravan star, because there are how many different nakshatras are there? 26, I think? 27 different constellations. Nakshatra means different lunar constellations. And there's one after another after another. Every day, basically, there's a different nakshatra that is giving its influence. Some are more auspicious than others. So this Shravan nakshatra, the Shravan star, as Prabhupada calls it, is a good day to hear about Dhruva Maharaj. And once every month, these rotate. At the end of a particular titi, basically a day, on the occasion of Vyatipata, I don't know what that is. Anyone know what Vyatipata is? There's no translation of it, is there? So these are all auspicious times. At the end of the month or on a Sunday, such recitations should of course be performed before a favorable audience. What is a favorable audience? An audience who wants to hear about Krishna. When recitation is performed in this way, without professional motive, the reciter and audience become perfect. So it's good for everyone. Good for those who speak and those who hear. Purport. Professional reciters may ask money to extinguish the blazing fire within their bellies. Prabhupada has such a way, sarcastic. Instead of extinguishing what is it? Blazing fire of what should be extinguished by hearing? Huh? Yeah, we usually say blazing fire of samsara or material existence or like that, or birth and death. So instead of helping people, and that's the motivation for reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, helping them remove, compassionately helping people remove the blazing fire of birth and death. Rather, they want to remove the blazing fire of hunger within their bellies. In other words, make money for themselves and their families. But they cannot make any spiritual improvement or become perfect, if that's the motive. It is therefore strictly forbidden to recite Srimad Bhagavatam as a profession to earn a livelihood. Only one who is completely surrendered at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, depending fully on Him for personal maintenance or even for maintenance of his family, can attain perfection by recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is full of narrations of the pastimes of the Lord and His devotees. The process can be summarized as follows. The audience must be faithfully receptive to the Bhagavata message. So what is that qualification of the hearers? Faith. And the reciter should completely depend on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so he should be surrendered. Bhagavata recitation must not be a business. If done in the right way, not only does the reciter achieve perfect satisfaction, but the Lord also is very satisfied with the reciter and the audience, and thus both are liberated from material bondage simply by the process of hearing. So there's a famous story in the Padma Purana of someone. It's a long story of someone became a ghost, and the recommendation that he would become free from his horrible condition if he would hear the Bhagavatam. So a Bhagavatam katha was set up. So that person, I can't remember his name. Do you know his name? So that person, he was present, and so many other people were present. And after so many days of hearing the Bhagavatam, suddenly the place where that ghost or whatever it was situated, it cracked, and he went back to Godhead. He assumed the form and went back to Godhead. So, and there were many other people who had listened with him. So everyone was saying, "Why is this is wonderful?" Because they all saw that he went back to Godhead. But then they wondered, why is it that he only went back to Godhead and no one else did? Because everyone was sitting there the whole time. And then the reply was given, because he listened. Because he was in such a painful, difficult circumstance that caused his mind to focus. Well, our tendency is the mind just drifts in and out of hearing something every now and then and thinking so many things. So we don't listen very attentively, so therefore we don't quite get the same result. So both are liberated because Krishna is satisfied with both the speaker and the audience simply by the process of hearing. But it should be attentive hearing, faithful hearing, and dependent pure speaking as well. Text 51, which is the next to last text in this chapter. This is more glories of the Dhruva Maharaj pastime. The narration of Dhruva Maharaj is sublime knowledge for the attainment of immortality. Persons unaware of the absolute truth can be led to the path of truth. Those who, out of transcendental kindness, take on the responsibility of becoming master protectors of the poor living entities automatically gain the interest and blessings of the demigods. Nitai, could you open the window a little? And we'll read this purport. Jnanam Agyata means knowledge which is unknown almost throughout the entire world. Jnanam Agyata, unknown knowledge. That's what it literally means. Knowledge that is not known. Very secret knowledge. Rahasya. No one knows actually what is the absolute truth. Materialists are very proud of their advancement in education, in philosophical speculation, and in scientific knowledge. But no one actually knows what the absolute truth is. The great sage Maitreya therefore recommends that to enlighten people about the absolute truth, tattva, devotees should preach the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam throughout the entire world. Now that in the early days of the Krishna consciousness movement, this point was made so strongly that the movement is a preaching movement. And now the face of the movement has changed more to a congregational movement. But if part of the congregational movement is hearing Krishna Katha, then we'll also hear like this, we'll hear these type of things, that we should preach the Bhagavatam throughout the entire world. That means also when we say preach throughout the entire world, it doesn't mean other parts of the world. It means this part of the world too. So who should be the preachers? We tend to point to someone, oh, he's the preacher. But actually, what it really should be, and the only way to really increase the preaching, is that to increase the number of preachers. That means that everyone really should become a preacher according to one's capacity. And then, regardless if we are greatly successful, or if we are just successful in a tiny, insignificant way, after all, it is all insignificant. The point is to make our attempt and let the result be up to Krishna. So we should try our best sincerely to follow this instruction of Prabhupada and of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We should preach in our own simple way according to our own realization, regardless of the success, but we should preach, we should tell people about Krishna and the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada even said, without preaching, the entire institution becomes... You know what the word is he used? Rubbish. Rubbish. Because that is the purpose of it, of the whole thing. Srila Vyasadeva especially compiled the great literature of scientific knowledge because people are completely aware of the absolute, are completely unaware of the absolute truth. In the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, it is said that Vyasadeva, the learned sage, compiled this great Bhagavata Purana just to stop the ignorance of the mass of people. Pura narko dunoditaha. Lokasya janato vidvam chakri sapita samita. Because the people do not know, he compiled specifically because of that. He compiled the Bhagavatam because there was such a lack of knowledge. Compiled by Vyas under the instructions of Narada. Generally, even though people are interested in understanding the truth, they take to speculation and reach at most the conception of impersonal Brahman. But very few men actually know the personality of Godhead. So this is true. There are so many people who have some sincere desire for the truth. And you see this all the time. There are people who are searching. But their concept of what that truth is more or less invariably always impersonal. So very, very few rare souls actually know the personality of Godhead. So we would like to be instruments for changing that so few people understand about Krishna. Recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam is specifically meant to enlighten people about the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead. Although there is no fundamental difference between impersonal Brahman, localized Paramatma, and the Supreme Person, factual immortality cannot be obtained unless and until one attains the stage of associating with the Supreme Person. Devotional service, which leads to the association of the Supreme Lord, is actual immortality. Pure devotees, out of compassion for the fallen souls, are kripalu, very kind to people in general. They distribute this Bhagavat knowledge all over the world. A kind-hearted devotee is called Dinanath, protector of the poor, ignorant mass of people. Lord Krishna is also known as Dinanath or Dinabandhu, the master or actual friend of the poor living entities. And his pure devotee also takes the same position of Dinanath. The Dinanathas, or devotees of Lord Krishna who preach the path of devotional service, become the favorites of the demigods. Generally, people are interested in worshipping the demigods, especially Lord Shiva, in order to obtain material benefits. But a pure devotee who engages in preaching the principles of devotional service as prescribed in Srimad Bhagavatam does not need to separately worship the demigods. The demigods are automatically pleased with him and offer all the blessings within their capacity. As by watering the root of a tree, The leaves and branches are automatically watered. By executing pure devotional service to the Lord, the branches, twigs, and leaves of the Lord, known as demigods, are automatically pleased with the devotee, and they offer all benedictions. And the final verse in the chapter. The transcendental activities of Dhruva Maharaj are well known all over the world, and they are very pure. In childhood, Dhruva Maharaj rejected all kinds of toys and playthings. He left the protection of his mother and seriously took shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. My dear Vidura, I shall therefore conclude this narration, for I have described to you all its details. In Prabhupada's short purport that concludes the chapter, it is said by Chanakya Pandit that life is certainly short for everyone, but if one acts properly, his reputation will remain for a generation. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is everlastingly famous, so the reputation of Lord Krishna's devotee is also everlasting. Therefore, in describing Dhruva Maharaj's activities, two specific words have been used: vikheta, very famous, and vishuddha, transcendental. Dhruva Maharaj is leaving home at a tender age and taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the forest is a unique example in this world. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 4th canto, 12th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Dhruva Maharaj Goes Back to Godhead. So, we'll begin chapter 13, the description of the descendants of Dhruva Maharaj. Suta Goswami, continuing to speak to all the rishis, headed by Shonaka, said, after hearing Maitreya Rishi describe Dhruva Maharaj's ascent to Lord Vishnu's abode, Vidura became very much enlightened in devotional emotion, and he inquired from Maitreya as follows. Vidura inquired from Maitreya, O greatly advanced devotee, who were the Prachetas? To which family did they belong? Whose sons were they, and where did they perform the great sacrifices? So in the previous chapter, those three verses in text 41 through 43, those three verses were recited by Narada Muni in the assembly of the Prachetas as they were performing a sacrifice. So Vidura is asking about the Prachetas. But before we hear that, let's hear the Prabhupada's purport. Again, glorifying Krishna Katha. As evidenced in the topics between Vidura and Maitreya, the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the devotees are so fascinating that neither the devotee who is describing them nor the devotee who is hearing is at all fatigued by the inquiries and answers. Transcendental subject matter is so nice that no one becomes tired of hearing or speaking. Others who are not devotees may think, how can people devote so much time simply to talk about God, to talks of God? But devotees are never satisfied or satiated in hearing and speaking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead or about his devotees. The more they hear and talk, the more they become enthusiastic to hear. The chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is simply the repetition of three words, Hare Krishna and Rama. But still, devotees can go on chanting this Hare Krishna mantra 24 hours a day without feeling fatigued. And although maybe this quality of devotee can't do that, but the examples are there of actual devotees, pure devotees, who used to chant basically 24 hours a day. Kujat kokila hansa sadasa gana kirne maya krile nanaratna dabadda mula vitapasa yukta vrindavane radha krishna harni sam prabhavato bhavam vibhuta muda bande rupa sanatano raghu yago sri jiva gopalakal sankhya purvaka nama gana natapi Kalava Sanigito, Nidrahar, without sleeping. They had given up sleeping. Nidrahar Vahara Kadi Vitato. Chatyanta Dino Chaya Radha Krishna Gunas Smritir. They're always remembering the qualities and pastimes and activities of Radha and Krishna. Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghu Yagoshi Divagopalako. And we saw this with Prabhupada, that he would practically had no time for sleeping. It was quite incredible because he was so elderly, but yet he was so enthusiastic. So enthusiastic. It was overwhelming, practically speaking. And he wished that we would become like that too. So enthusiastic, caught up in the spirit of service to Radha and Krishna, to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So if one is a devotee in that mood, just chanting and glorifying and preaching 24 hours a day, practically speaking, and then, although because we have material bodies, even the exalted devotees would have to sleep some. Sometimes they'd sleep only, how long? 1.5 hours, 2 hours a day, 4 hours a day, 3 hours a day, like that. Prabhupada would go to sleep generally around 10 o'clock in the evening and wake up around midnight. And then he'd rest a little more in the day, a couple hours, like that. So, this is quite wonderful. And sometimes Prabhupada used to say the Goswamis, they become so enthusiastic in their chanting that they would forget to sleep that hour and a half a night. Not that they'd be looking at their watch and say, well, when will that hour and a half finally come? At least I can rest a little bit. This is so hard being a Goswami. You don't get any sleep. No, they were just really enthusiastic, fully overflowing in enthusiasm. It was natural for them. It was natural. We shouldn't be imitative, but it was truly natural for them. So when Vidura heard those prayers by Narada, glorifications of Dhruva Maharaj from the assembly of the Pachetas, it gave him the opportunity to ask a question about the Pachetas, and we'll be hearing about the Pachetas fully, because their pastimes are also quite wonderful. We'll be hearing about them fully at the end of this canto. So Vidura began he asked about the Pachetas and said, I know the great sage Narada is the greatest of all devotees. He has compiled the Pancharatriki procedures of devotional service and has directly met the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the path that we follow, it's a combination, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, between Bhagavad Vidhi and Pancharatriki Vidhi. Pancharatriki Vidhi means all the rules and regulations that we follow about deity worship, etc. And Bhagavad Marga, Bhagavad Vidhi means the process that we advance mostly by just hearing and chanting. So we follow a combination of both. While all the Pachetas were executing religious rituals and sacrificial ceremonies and thus worshipping the Personality of Godhead for his satisfaction, the great sage Narada described the transcendental activities of Dhruva Maharaj. My dear Brahmana, how did Narada Muni glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and what pastimes were described in that meeting? I'm very eager to hear of them. Kindly explain fully about the glorification of the Lord. So Maitreya Muni replied, my dear Vidura, when Maharaj Dhruva departed for the forest, so he's going to say something in between. He said his son, when Dhruva left for the forest. Who was put? Because when Uttanapad left for the forest, Dhruva was put in as the king. And when Dhruva left for the forest, who was put in as the king? So when Dhruva departed for the forest, his son Utkal, he did not desire to accept the opulent throne of his father, which was meant for the ruler of all the lands of this planet. From his very birth, Utkal was fully satisfied and unattached to the world. He was equipoised, and he could see everything resting in the Supersoul, and the Supersoul present in everyone's heart. Because Utkal was a Mahabhagavata, and he had no desire to get involved in the ruling of the world. By expansion of his knowledge of the Supreme Brahman, he had already attained liberation from the bondage of the body. So I think it's, since there's a long purport here, and we'll read that, so better to read that tomorrow. We'll hear about Utkal, and then we'll see how far we go. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. So we've now finished the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj. And now descendants of Dhruva Maharaj, and we're going to go to right to King Vena. And then from Vena, who was a cruel king, we go to Prithu Maharaj. And then shortly after Prithu Maharaj, we will get to King Prajini Barhishat and the Prachetas. And then the canto will be finished. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
In 4:12, day 8.
Yep.
This is word Krishna Prayana. Translates as fully Krishna conscious. And then in the purport, he gives Prayana as meaning going forward.
Going forward?
Yeah, in the purport.
Oh, the meaning. Okay. But also, he also says in the purport, is fully Krishna conscious.
Yeah. No, I couldn't understand it, because going forward seems like something's not yet full, not yet reached. It's still, three times is still. He's just fully as the translation.
What does he say? Anyone who is going forward to the goal of Krishna is called Krishna Parayana, or fully Krishna conscious.
Just so, trying to understand what Prabhupada is trying
to do. I think the meaning is like when you get on, if you're on the plane. If you get on a plane here going to Delhi, just by getting on the plane, you're more or less in Delhi. On one level, because you're so strongly taken to the process of getting there, and so you're practically there. So, but in another sense, you're only going forward towards Delhi, but practically speaking, you're already there. It's just a little bit of time that separates you. So in that sense, they're the same. Fully Krishna conscious. Fully being there and going forward are the same if one is on that level. Now there are so many levels before that, before you get on the plane, though, where you're sort of going forward, but you're not quite on that level that you say that you're really there already. Because that's what happens. You know, you're working, you're getting your ticket, you're arranging this, you're buying that, and you don't really feel like you're going in one sense. But then when you get on the plane, you sit down in your seat and you go, ah. Like that. So it depends what you want to emphasize, how you'll define it. Is that all right? Is that okay?
Yeah,
Huh?
I should have known that.
There's a lot of things that we should have known that we don't know. This isn't the only one. And it's not only you. Okay, that was one question.
Also, in yesterday's class, you made an answer to Sarah's question. You talked about inherently spiritual activities and neutral activities.
Yeah.
Now, I couldn't understand how something is inherently spiritual, because you said inherently spiritual to me is Shravana and Kirtan. But hearing or
hearing about Krishna.
It's not hearing or speaking.
Hearing about Krishna specifically.
So
here is our activities during the day are of different varieties. There are the surupsiddhi ones, like directly hearing about Krishna or speaking about Krishna. And then we're cleaning the floor or something like that, or we're managing or like that. So those have to be spiritualized. Those activities are when someone's working in the garden or someone's driving to pick up something. So those are activities that don't inherently have any spiritual qualities. Driving around or working in a garden isn't inherently spiritual. But hearing about Krishna, hearing Bhagavatam or chanting Hare Krishna is inherently spiritual, so there's a difference. So one has to be spiritualized, but the other is inherently spiritual. But cooking and driving is the activity. But hearing about Krishna is what you're doing. It's the consciousness that makes that one better. So the point being is that if you don't have enough of these directly, inherently spiritual activities, those neutral activities won't be spiritualized. We'll keep them on the level of karma. And that's a great danger that we tend to fall into. So therefore, we insist, as Prabhupada mentioned, about the sufficient hearing and chanting in the morning and the evening. That's what Prabhupada recommended. You follow?
Slightly.
When you're hearing about Krishna,
yeah,
it's directly, we say Krishna is directly there. But when you're working in the garden, but even if you're not hearing the Bhagavatam for Krishna, if you're hearing about Krishna, whether you're hearing it for Krishna or not, but when you're working in the garden, it's completely different. When you're chanting Krishna's names, it is directly, it has spiritual activity in and of it, spiritual content in and of itself. But working in the garden doesn't have spiritual activity in and of itself. It's your consciousness that you bring to it that takes that neutral thing and colors it in a Krishna conscious fashion.
So if we're doing neutral activity,
and if we don't have sufficient inherent spiritual activity, that neutral activity won't be colored in Krishna conscious sufficiently, and we'll think that's the same, it's all devotional service. But there, it is devotional service, but there has to be sufficient hearing and chanting to make that devotional service. Well, this is inherently devotional service.
So how would you increase the hearing and chanting while you're gardening?
Maybe the hearing and chanting has to be increased at another time,
right,
so you carry that through to your gardening or whatever else you're doing, or cooking or anything else, or managing or this and that.
So if one is sufficiently Krishna conscious, then a neutral activity can actually be inherently spiritual.
No, it can't be. It's not of the same thing, but it will be spiritualized.
No.
This is inherently spiritual. Hearing the Bhagavatam is inherently spiritual. But gardening isn't inherently spiritual. But it can be spiritualized, fighting, like Arjuna was fighting, asked to fight. That's not inherently spiritual. But because he was fighting for Krishna, it was spiritualized. But the nine processes of devotional service are inherently spiritual. So therefore they are the essence of our spiritual life. Clear? Clearer?
Clearer, yes.
Good. And question number 3.
In verse 12:47, why is the trouble taken to couple thoughtful men and adoration together? Thoughtful men who want adoration.
What's the Sanskrit on that? I don't know why it's... It's not exactly in the Sanskrit, is it? Oh, yes. Om manas, manas vanam. Maybe because it's... if you want adoration, there are... See, what it says is, here's the process by which to acquire them. And for thoughtful men who want adoration, here's the proper means. So there are unthoughtful men who want adoration. And how do they do it? There's so many ways. They, you know, take out ads and glorifying themselves or whatever. But a thoughtful man who wants adoration, like Dhruva Maharaj was a thoughtful man who wanted a kingdom. So he took the thoughtful process of getting a kingdom, the pious process, which was to become a devotee. And then he got his kingdom, but he also got more than that. So a thoughtful man who wants adoration, he won't take an ad out for himself, but he'll hear about Dhruva Maharaj and he'll get his adoration. But he'll get more than that as well. Is that clear? Okay. So there are thoughtful and unthoughtful ways to get our material desires fulfilled. The thoughtful way is to vena bhakti yogeni ajeta purushapara. Worshipping the Lord. Not that it's recommended that we worship Krishna to get material things, but if we want material things, instead of going outside of Krishna to try to get them, we should go to Krishna. That's the point. Okay? Question? Yeah.
Were you saying before that the preaching is compared to the early days is declining? Less than what it used to be.
So that spirit.
People are not going out to. Talking about.
Shimabhagavatam. No, I really shouldn't say that because it's different in different places,
no,
maybe.
In relationship to the congregation. I'm just wondering in what way you see it being this.
What I meant to say is that every person thought of themselves as a preacher. And nowadays people think, here are the preachers and here's the congregation. That's what I meant. We're the preached too. But in those days, everyone thought that they were preachers. So I wasn't saying that that was bad, but if the congregation should also become preachers, then it becomes especially such a nice way to increase the number of preachers. Any other? Did you have a question? No, I thought someone else. Okay. Yeah.
We are saying the inherent activity and the neutral activity, like hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, is inherently spiritual activity. That means even if sometimes we have been sitting in a Bhagavatam class, if we're not attentive,
it's inherently spiritual, although we may not be taking advantage of it properly. In and of itself, it has spiritual potency, although we may not be connecting to it. But you have to take that spiritual potency and carry it to the gardening, to the managing, to the this, to the that. Talking about Krishna inherently has spiritual potency. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Vishnu, remembering Krishna, worshipping the deity, the Dham inherently has spirit. Not that we can also avoid getting the full benefit from these things too, for sure. But they inherently have spiritual potency. Okay. Okay, thank you very much. So tomorrow we'll continue in chapter 13, if Krishna allows. We'll hear about Utkal and then go on to hear about the descendants of Utkal, which will lead us to Maharaj Vena, cruel Vena. Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Dubh Maharaj ki jai.